Well, I guess I'll just start to welcome everyone here. Welcome to GraduCon. If this is the first session you're attending, welcome. If you attended one of the earlier sessions, welcome back. Thanks for sticking with us throughout this day of virtual career exploration and learning. My name's Mike Tessel. I'm the Director of Graduate Career Development and Employer Relations at UChicago Grad. This is the 11th annual GraduCon, the first annual virtual GraduCon. So thanks so much for joining us. And I wanted to say a couple words before we jump into this panel about the day. So let's switch to the next slide. I'm just going to put up the schedule for the day here. We're in the second session of GraduCon. There are concurrent panels going on. So this is the Careers and Consulting panel. If you wanted to join another one, you may do that. The links to all the panels are on the GraduCon website, which is listed here at the bottom. So if you want to check out any other panels, please go there and you'll find the Zoom links. I also want to put in a special plug for the keynote address. We're very excited to have the new provost of the university, Kai-Yi Lee, join us. And she's going to share her thoughts on graduate education and career planning. So I really hope that you'll take this opportunity to meet her and learn about kind of her what her thoughts on leaving the university. And then here are the afternoon sessions are listed here. We hope you'll join us for those as well. Couple notes on Zoom. So we are going to be using the Q&A feature today here. So if you have questions for the panelists, you can enter them in the Q&A box, and you can also upvote other questions that you like. So if you see a question that you like or that's similar to the one you had, you can just click the thumbs up, and Pam, our moderator, will go through those throughout the session. There is a chat feature that we're going to reserve just for technical questions that our staff will answer. So the panelists will not be looking at the chat feature. And with that, I would like to introduce our panel here. Their bios and links to their LinkedIn profiles are also on the GraduCon website. And with that, I will turn it over to our before I turn it over to our moderator, I do want to launch a quick poll just so we could see who is in the audience. So I'm going to put that up here. I'm also going to end the screen share. So just give that few more seconds for some people to vote, just so we can see who's here. And that'll be helpful for our panelists as they go about thinking about their questions. All right. So Pam, are you ready to go?
We're all set.
All right. I am going to should I drop or can I remove the polls? It's probably in the way of
Yeah, so go ahead
visual.
and end the poll, Mike, and then you can share the results.
Ah, I have to end the poll to share the results. Okay. End polling. And I'm going to share the results. So you
Okay.
can all see who's here. Students can see, and students at post office can see who else is here. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to our moderator, Pam, who will introduce herself and move on with the panel. And I'm gonna drop out of this and leave it to you.
Excellent. Well, good morning, everybody, and thank you again on behalf of UChicago Grad and all of our panelists for joining this exciting format. I know that I've done this for a number of years, moderating this panel. I always enjoy this session. Of course, we would love to be together on campus, but I think we're going to have equally as exciting of a conversation, getting some insights from some consultants who have been in your seats as graduate students and have been through the process of both thinking about their career path, preparing, securing consulting jobs, and then having been in that role. So I'm going to ask to start with each of our panelists to introduce themselves, and then I'll give everyone a quick overview of my background, and then we'll begin. Mostly what I'm going to try to do is ask a few questions of each of the panelists, then I'll take a few pauses along the way to answer some of your questions that are being put into the Q&A area. So with that, could I ask Hillary first to introduce yourself?
Yep. Good morning, everyone. My name is Hillary Child. I earned my PhD at UChicago last year in 2019 in physics, and then I started at the BCG Chicago office.
Great. And how about Alexis, please?
Great. Hi, everyone. My name is Alexis Howard. I also graduated with my PhD from UChicago last year in 2019. I studied comparative human development. That's in the social sciences, in case you don't know. And then I joined McKinsey, and I've been with McKinsey for about 9 months now.
Fantastic. And Max?
Good morning, everyone. I'm Max Malakari. I'm a consultant at Bain & Company. I did my PhD in Australia, finishing in 2016. I moved to Chicago and was a postdoc at University of Chicago's Kavli Institute for Cosmological Physics in high-energy astrophysics. I was actually part of the Bain Advanced Degree Internship Program, Advantage, in 2018. And then I joined Bain full-time in July 2019.
Excellent. Thank you. So my name is Pam Schilling. I'll be moderating. I am a Booth alumnus, so I have my MBA from the University of Chicago, and then recently finished my doctorate at DePaul University in business administration with my focus on career and strategy. And my work over the years, I worked as a strategy consultant for a number of years at three different firms, and then moved into consulting around career advancement and career development. And I run my own company now, working with students, working with professionals, pursuing careers in consulting and other professional endeavors. And it's always my pleasure to be a part of this, because I learn some really interesting things as well, even after my years of experience. So again, let's thank all of our panelists as we go along for taking time out of their day. So I want to start with a topic about kind of going back to the point when each of you was thinking about your future careers. You're pursuing your PhDs. And could you talk about what originally was your thinking when you began your PhD program? And what was then the evolution that took you down the consulting path? And maybe Max, could I have you start us off?
Sure. So when I finished getting towards the end of my PhD in 2016, I was pretty sure that academia is where I wanted to be, or if not sure, I wanted to give it a go, I suppose. So I started searching for postdoc jobs. Moved over to Chicago and took up this position at University of Chicago. And I think one of the benefits for me of having done a postdoc is I sort of saw the highlights of what an academic career might look like. And for me, that highlighted that, you know, as you become more and more senior as an academic, you spend increasingly more time writing grant proposals and trying to, you know, get funding to fund all of this exciting research. But you spend less and less of your time actually doing the exciting work and more time sort of delegating that to students, I suppose. And so I was looking for something that was sort of interesting, problem-solving based, like very tangible, that had, you know, real-world impact, and something that was sort of where the impact was immediate. And that's something that's far less expeditious in academia, where there's a huge lag between perhaps doing some research and that research being recognized or presented somewhere. And I guess my first real insight into consulting actually came through this very panel at the beginning of 2018. I'd never heard of consulting. I was actually thinking about going into data science because I thought that was a place where my skill set would be, you know, would be useful, and I had skills that would allow me to sort of succeed there. And then I heard about consulting and that there were all of these exciting business problems that needed solving, and the fact that I'd learn something new and perhaps, you know, open up further opportunities down the road in completely different areas. And you know, as a result of that, I started applying to the three major firms, and that's how I ended up where I am right now. But it's been an exciting journey, and I think I've gotten out of it so far exactly what I'd hoped I would.
Nice, and we'll come back to that, Max, as well. Hillary, could you offer your thoughts on that question?
Yeah, so I, at the start of grad school, I was fairly certain I did not want to pursue academia long-term, but I did not have a good sense of what the alternative options even were at that point. So from the beginning of grad school, I went to a lot of events like this, general information sessions, just trying to get a feel for what the options were. And in addition to learning what the options were, trying to think through what was I even looking for? What were the sorts of things that I liked and didn't like about what I was currently doing? And how could those translate into possible careers? So consulting came on my radar pretty early from an info session. And I think what initially interested me about it was, to echo Max a little, the impact opportunities, the learning opportunities. It felt like I could learn a lot about the world in addition to having an impact on it, and also some development of my own skills. And I think as I continued through grad school, I was still considering other options. Data science was pretty high on my list as well. And I think I finally settled on consulting after also doing a couple summer programs and just being more immersed in learning about the people and the sorts of things they were working on, and just found it really interesting at that point.
Great. And Alexis?
So when I started grad school, I was fairly naive to what exactly I'd just gotten myself into and didn't have a clear end goal for that. So I really spent the first couple of years kind of sussing out academia, and then fairly quickly realized that I didn't want to at least put all my eggs in one basket, that is academia, as I was observing some of the hiring patterns happening. So I wasn't super sold on academia, and sort of echoing, I think, what Max and both Hillary have mentioned, is that there's sort of a lag in academia between the work you do and any impact it may have in the world, if any at all, which frustrated me. So I began to explore other options. I was introduced to consulting, actually, there was a summer consulting camp that a Chicago grad ran, and it's like you meet every day for a week in the mornings. Pam was there. So I attended that for the week and was really introduced to what consulting is as an industry, and then what someone with an academic background might need to do to pivot themselves into that world. So I actually attended, I think it was maybe my third year of grad school that I did that. And so sort of keeping that in the back of my mind over the following years, I think that really helped me set myself up well to when I hit the job search myself.
Great. So one thing I think I maybe just want to follow up on very quickly and have one or two of you address, this process of kind of not really knowing and then sharpening your focus to consulting. I mean, that's a very big transition to go through. And what advice, having gone through your process, might you now offer to say, you know, look, if you're in that state of unknowing after 2-3 years of grad school, to be able to focus on consulting and then move into that process? I mean, are there one or two things that any of you might share that you think might benefit individuals that are in your same situation? And maybe Hillary, I'll come back to you if you wouldn't mind.
Yeah, so definitely, so it depends on where you are in the timeline, certainly. Mm-hmm. I found it very helpful to just go to every info session type thing that I could. and not with any real strategy in mind for it, but just gathering information and seeing what stuck in my head and seeing what was more or less appealing to me. Any sorts of extracurricular activities I think can be helpful, whether that means like the summer programs for consulting. At that point, you're already somewhat ramping up into that process, but they were very useful to put a final view on how I was feeling about it. And I think through doing things, both through doing my research and extracurricular things I was involved with in grad school, just with everything you do, think about, what do I like about this? What do I want to do more of? What is something I'd like to move away from? And then as you learn more about different career options through info sessions, through, I found the grad resources very helpful, just try to compare that list. I had like a running list of probably six things that I would sort of shuffle up and down over the years. So just kind of, I never focused intently on we're going to make a decision, but it was just letting it kind of percolate over the time period.
We're upvoting your own list, upvoting and downvoting your own list.
Yes. Yep. Mm-hmm.
Nice. Alexis, how about you?
Sure. I think sort of the irony of that question for me is that part of why I joined consulting was that I was still unsure, right, about what I wanted to do in the future moving forward, which is one of the biggest perks of being a generalist associate, which is what I am. I can still explore a lot of different things. I will say, as soon as I started to realize that I wanted to not limit myself to just an academic job search, I did start to think a little more intentionally about ways I could both market the skills I was developing in grad school and also very intentionally seeking out opportunities to develop those skills that would be appealing to employers that aren't just academic employers, right? So that meant, in my case, I took on a research job at the NORC on campus, actually. It meant that I did take a couple of business classes, not because I felt like I needed them. I just wanted to be more comfortable with that vocabulary and be able to have those conversations and not feel like I was in a foreign planet. I just really wanted to think a little more critically, like, okay, if I don't stay in academia, what are my options and how can I best position myself to get those? One of the interesting things with consulting is that often your job offer will come well before you start, which is sort of a side effect of how business schools are run. So what worked out is that I had a job offer a year before I graduated, which meant that I didn't, a consulting job offer before I graduated, which meant that I didn't have to think too much about it in my last year. I hope that answered the question.
Yeah, for sure. So something that each of you has mentioned that I want to probe on just a little bit is the skill set that you're developing as a graduate student. And now that you've been in this consulting job and you think about the skill set that is developed in graduate school, I mean, what were you thinking would be relevant? And now that you've been in the job, what in addition to that maybe do you see or what's maybe differed? Max, could I maybe ask you to start?
Sure. So, I mean, when I was thinking about consulting and how my academic skill set would sort of transfer across when I pivoted careers, I think I was initially focused on perhaps my most, you know, the most important asset of someone with an academic background. Or someone with an academic background in quite an analytical field would be really the analytics side of my expertise. You know, you're comfortable with like very large nebulous type like quantitative calculations and taking big problems and distilling them into smaller chunks. And I think, you know, I realize now that I've been in the job for 9 months that there's, you know, while there's a lot of sort of quantitative problem solving within consulting, like a lot of the work that you do is actually very qualitative and perhaps more focused around how you communicate an idea rather than how you actually come up with a number. And I think there's a lot of skills that you learn in academia and actually communication. I mean, there's a lot of people give a lot of talks at conferences. There are, you know, collaboration meetings at which you might, you know, present some of the work you're doing, but it is a different type of communication. And I think, you know, as well as academia prepares you for that, it's also being something that sort of surprised me, like how much runway I still have to develop my communication skills when it comes to expressing very, very complex ideas in a sort of simple way. But I would certainly say that not being overwhelmed by very large nebulous problems is probably one of the greatest assets that you can bring to consulting from an academic background.
Alexis, maybe your thoughts on that question.
Ooh, that's a tough one. I think when I joined Herify on the consulting track, I was very focused on at least what, you know, at McKinsey we call conceptual problem solving, which is that really, it's kind of a tough skill to develop, but that grad students tend to excel at, which is that really intense critical thinking and analytical skill set that we build out. And while that's certainly important, I don't find that I actually use that as often as I was expecting. There are certain studies I'm on or clients that I serve where it's more important than others. And somewhere, as Max mentioned, the communication ability is really, really important. The interpersonal skills are important. At the end of the day, we're a client service industry. And so, you know, a huge chunk of our work is just building those really great relationships with our clients and then with our own team members, right? Knowing how to manage our time, knowing how to manage our resources, leverage resources that each of our firms, I'm sure, offer. Those are the sorts of skills that are probably even more important to success in the role that I wasn't necessarily aware of coming into it. But I actually find those things exciting, so it's worked out well for me.
And Hillary.
I agree with everyone, Max, or everything Max and Alexis have listed so far. I think like the quantitative skills, the more qualitative analysis, being able to read a lot of information and synthesize it, time management, all of those things I think are skills you develop in grad school and are very relevant. I was expecting that. I think one layer that they've both touched on as well is that you have a great foundation for all of these things from grad school, and then that you're using them in a slightly different context. And so you may be very strong analytically, but you're solving slightly different problems. And so translating those skills into the new context is the part that's a little additional. But I think everything they've listed, it's all very useful.
Yeah, I mean, I can add to it, and I did my doctoral work in inverse of everyone on the panel. I did it, you know, I finished last year. And oddly, I think I found, compared to many of the individuals in my program, the process of developing my research approach and my dissertation, it really unfolded very much like a consulting engagement. And so having a little bit of that hindsight, you know, thinking about the core question, thinking about the hypothesis, thinking about the analytic approach, how to gather data, I think those skill sets all very much apply. And I think what Alexis just said is Hillary just said, you're very much applying them in a different context. And then Alexis' comment about, you know, trying to get some of the business foundations, you know, in the midst of your graduate education can be helpful. But I think I would be interested to know from each of you how much business acumen you feel is necessary before you enter the consulting job. I mean, I know, Alexis, you mentioned you took a couple of business courses. You know, Max, what's your thinking about kind of some pre-business education or how much business acumen you need to kind of enter into the job?
Yeah, that's a great question. I mean, my discovery of consulting was so, I guess, soon before the whole recruiting process that I didn't really have any time to build any foundational business knowledge before that process kicked off. I think, I guess the way that I think about it now, having started the job and having seen how MBAs come in and, you know, excel at the job early on, you know, there's really, consulting is sort of an apprenticeship model where you learn by doing and you learn by watching other people do. And there's no degree in consulting that anyone can do. And I wouldn't say that coming in as an academic with no business background really hindered me in any way. at the end of the day, it's a job about problem solving, and every case and client situation is completely unique. And while having some familiarity, I guess, with business terms and like basic business concepts would be useful initially, given the kind of background you have from a research perspective, those are things that you can pick up very quickly on the job day to day. And I haven't in the 9 months that I've been there so far ever had a situation where I thought, oh, I should know that, and I don't. Or if I have thought I should know that and I don't, it's very easy for me to go away and, you know, learn the small facet of business knowledge which I haven't been exposed to before. So I think, yeah, it's largely this apprenticeship culture which sort of diverts you away from having to have too much business knowledge when you're coming into the job. But I still think certainly any foundational understanding that you do have is going to be an asset in the long term.
Hillary, any thoughts from you on that question?
Yeah, I agree that it definitely doesn't hurt to have some knowledge. BCG, at least, all of the PhDs starting, we get a 2-week mini business program, which you're not going to learn a full MBA's worth in 2 weeks. You get a little of the vocabulary, but there have definitely been times when I'm coming across some new concept and I Google it, and there are people with MBAs who also don't know that concept and are Googling it. So you're doing things that are very specific and detailed, and everyone is going to have to learn new information. And so you're not disadvantaged by not having that background. I sat in on, I think, a couple business classes, literally just sitting in on them. I didn't even sign up because I thought they were interesting in undergrad, or not undergrad, grad school. And I think it was somewhat useful in the recruiting process to have some knowledge of some of these words, whether it was from economics or sitting in on classes. But again, that's something you learned through the process of preparing for interviews. So my experience has mostly been that the things you need in the business area, I've learned as I go. And you can always be more prepared, but I haven't felt too unprepared.
Right. And Alexis, any other input from your
perspective? Yeah, I just want to echo what they said. I don't think a business background, I don't think I've done any work, just to be clear, at the firm so far where I really felt like I needed more business knowledge. That has yet to happen to me. You know, if you know what a profit margin is, you're probably going to be just fine. I did take the business classes, and I think if anything, I mean, I was interested in them, like Hillary said, and I think what it probably did do for me is that it maybe made me a little more confident going into the interviews, because the case studies sometimes, it might be helpful to know some of these phrases and terminology, just to have a common vocabulary with the person that's interviewing you, right? So it's less about me being able to do the job and more about me walking into that case interview feeling, now I don't know the reverse, I hadn't taken the classes, if I would have felt equally confident, I don't know, but that's my backwards looking suspicion, is that it might have helped me there.
Yeah, and that's great to have you guys all talk about that. And I think for the audience, you know, for me, spending the majority of my time in the MBA world, I mean, most MBA students, their internship interviews happen in January. They've been in business school for one quarter, which means they have 4 classes. And many of the MBAs have no business background. And so, you know, even in the business school environment, there's kind of a general view of how much business acumen you need to have. And largely it's, do you have a passion for business, and do you get kind of the insights of some of the issues, and do you show that curiosity? So if that's, you know, something that individuals are thinking about, you know, keep some of those things in mind. So before I take some questions from our audience, I want to have each of you maybe talk about a recent client project or a client project that, you know, you feel illuminates a little bit of what this consulting job is, so that, you know, we can give some substance to the kind of work that you're doing to make it a little bit more real. Alexis, would you mind maybe sharing a project from you, and maybe what kind of challenged you, what you thought was really interesting about that work?
Sure. So I have been working in the healthcare sector almost exclusively. I did spend the first couple months at the firm doing some consumer work, so like an e-commerce company, for example. But now I'm doing healthcare work. I'm currently wrapping up one study, transitioning to the next. What's been interesting in the current one and the challenges we face, we have been working on a study that just has to do with overall performance of a particular healthcare entity, right? Tracking their costs, their revenues, et cetera, just very classic consulting kind of work. That work was proceeding as expected, and then COVID-19 hit. And so one of the challenges we've had is that our clients were like, yes, we're still invested in this project, we want it to go forth, but in the meantime, everything's on fire, right? So trying to keep the engagement moving forward while there are fires burning elsewhere that are rightfully so much more important, that has been a struggle. And that's sort of what I was referencing about that communication style and your relationship building and your personal skills are really important, because we're asking clients right now to do things that maybe are not high on their priority list because there are legitimate fires burning elsewhere that need their attention. And we're still trying to keep them engaged in our study. I'm ramping onto a study right now that is another healthcare study for a healthcare provider that is very much so focused on COVID and a response to that. So that will be a very different set of challenges, I'm sure. But that's the kind of work I've been doing.
Great. Thank you. Hillary.
I'm also currently working on something COVID related. I'm working with a consumer packaged food manufacturer to just start to think about how should they be responding to COVID and what should they be thinking about in addition to putting out fires right now. What should they be thinking about to be prepared as things continue to change? And that has fit very much with one of the things I really was interested in with consulting, which is that there's this huge thing going on in the world right now, and I'm getting to think about it all day and sort of try to maybe make things better. So I think there's definitely a huge amount of uncertainty. No one knows what is happening in the future. There are a lot of smart people trying to figure it out. And so every day there's nobody even knows what questions they should be asking, but I'm getting to sift through all the materials of what everyone is thinking about this right now and track how that changes and how that should be affecting what the client is thinking about.
Great, thank you. And Max.
I think I'll give two examples because it sort of highlights the varied different types of work that you can do as a consultant. And I think it's kind of funny just like comparing and contrasting the two of them. So on my first day on the job last July, I was working sort of ad hoc with the private equity group. And at the time they were looking into things called glass microbeads, which are these tiny glass spheres that sit in road marking paint and make it reflective so that you can see it with your headlights when you're driving at night. And we were trying to sort of understand if there was a difference in the type of microbeads that was used in like the northern half of the United States relative to the southern half based on different climates. You know, the fact that in the north of the United States, it snows more and snow clearing activities might rip the microbeads off of the road. So it turns out that they use different sorts in the north and the south, you know, thermoplastics in the south, beads in the paint in the north. And that was a week of sort of cold calling Department of Transport across every state in the US, starting on the East Coast early in the morning and moving to the West Coast as the day sort of progressed, you know, trying to work out who their suppliers were, which microbeads they were using, whether they were contracted to do just repairs or whether they were you know, performing new work. So that was really a sort of interesting exercise and one of those industries you never think you have any insight into, which, you know, now I feel like an expert on glass microbeads and road marking paint. And then pretty much for the last sort of 6 or 7 months after that, I was, like Alexis, also working in healthcare. My first real case, our team was assisting in the development of a deployment plan for a set of tools and tactics that were aimed at improving the customer experience of clinical trial sites across the entire portfolio of a global pharmaceutical company. A lot of client communication and change management type work in that project, synthesizing all the sort of complex concepts into very digestible client-facing summaries. And then that project sort of merged into a different project where we took those tools and tactics that we developed for them, and we took one of their very sort of high-profile clinical trials that had, you know, a lot of commercial potential and was sort of facing a competitive threat, and we applied some of those tools and tactics to help them accelerate enrollment into the trial through accelerating site startups, the way that the pharma company engaged with those clinical trial sites, and how to better communicate, you know, the benefits of the particular drug and why, and why a clinical trial site should sign up a patient. So vastly different projects. I think through both of those, though, the biggest surprise to me, I mean, I thought coming into consulting, there'd be a lot of, you know, sort of, like a lot of the projects that you would be involved in would be dealing sort of on the front line with dollar signs, you know, like cost cutting or maybe, you know, how do you increase revenue, you know, or something like that. Whereas the actual work that I've been working on really for the first 9 months, I haven't even seen a dollar sign. It's been very sort of front lines, like how are you dealing with a particular product, or how are you performing primary fundamental research into a particular, you know, business line that your client might want to sort of accelerate growth in. So it's been super interesting and vastly different, I guess, to the kinds of work that I thought I would be doing. And it makes me very excited for what I might be doing next.
So a little bit rapid fire, and then I have a couple questions from our audience. Can you each describe tactically, you know, today is Friday. What work are you doing? What is it? So beyond the broad problem, what is the activity that you are participating in that then sort of results in the contribution to the engagement? So what, you know, whether it's on a Friday or a Wednesday, what types of things are you guys doing? Alexis, could I maybe get one or two things from you?
Sure.
Sort of short description.
Sure. So my client right now, we are working to help them stand up a new office that sort of oversees the performance at an organizational level. So it's very client coaching heavy. So tactically speaking, this week I've arranged a number of training sessions to use the new technology they'll be using moving forward, the new tool they'll be using moving forward. I've helped design some training sessions on how to work effectively remotely, how to lead teams effectively remotely. What else have I done this week? I think that's probably the brunt of it. We do a lot of CXO level conversations. So we've also been working on some documents for that and preparing for those conversations.
Great. And Hillary.
So like I mentioned, I'm currently working on a COVID response project and trying to figure out what are the questions the client should be focusing on right now. So we're right at the beginning of a project, and ideally in the next few weeks we'll be doing more analysis, but the first step is figuring out what analyses do we need to do, what questions are we trying to answer. So this week I've been reading a lot of internal materials and things other case teams have been working on in response to see what sorts of things they're starting to see happening. And so that's looked like reading through a lot of PowerPoint slides, looking at charts, what's more generally going on, starting to sift through those for the major questions, and then coming up with a list of questions that I then iterate with the other people on my team to start to build a list of things we should be analyzing. And then I was also putting together a data request to give to the client so that we can start to do some analysis with their own data. I've been doing a few things from a previous project, following up on some questions about what I was working on was looking at the shape of the organization. And so there are some weird cases of people doing weird things in the like structure. And so I was going back to that data and answering some questions about that. I think that's most of this week. I think that'll change after we have that list of questions set and are starting to do analysis, then it will be more dealing with numbers.
Great, thank you. Max.
Actually, I love this question because it's probably the number one question that I had when I was going through the recruiting process, you know, the thing that I wanted to ask everyone in a networking event was, what exactly do you do? What did you do today? What will you do tomorrow? What will you do next week? So at the moment, I've just started on a new client recently. I'm now working in the insurance industry, and we're standing up sort of a strategic transformation for the underwriting function of a auto and fire insurer. And because it's sort of in the setup phase of the case, a lot of what we're doing is actually defining what it is exactly that they want to do. So sort of similar to some of the things that Alex and Hillary said, a lot of it surrounds what are the strategic questions that we're trying to answer. You know, we're trying to find some strategic vision for what this function looks like in 10 years from now, say. What are the strategic questions that we're trying to answer? How are we going to go about answering them? Like, how will we set up a team within the client whose job it is to answer these questions? And at the moment, it's very fundamentally, like, we have a meeting and we decide, all right, what is the governance model for this plan? You know, do we have, like, a person who leads this transformation program? And then we have some sub-teams who work on different components. How often do these people meet? How do they communicate with each other across teams? So there's a lot of sort of client coaching aspects to it. And then in parallel to that, we're sort of looking ahead, like, okay, this is where we think that this project will go. And there's going to be a modeling component. Like, how do we model, like, changes in the workforce? And getting ahead of those sort of things. Like, so that when that question, like, inevitably in 2 weeks from now, somebody asks, we already have, here's a model on a piece of paper. Like, here's one slide that outlines how you might make, you know, this particular model so that we can hit the ground running and sort of be ahead of things. But really, at the moment, it's largely meetings to drive pace and have everyone on the same page about how the rest of the work will proceed for the remainder of the case.
Great. There's one question from the audience that I want to pose at this step, and then we're going to move to some discussion about actually the interview preparation. So someone has asked, how do you feel about, when you're working on projects, kind of a connection to the mission or the purpose of that project and your client? Is that something that enters your thinking, that is a consideration or an important attribute for you? Hillary, could you maybe comment on that first?
Yeah, so my first thought in response to that is that one thing I've been interested in starting out in consulting, haven't yet had the opportunity to work on, but hope to in the future, is social impact type work. So working whether with nonprofits or businesses to, in the business case, to improve their practices and have some positive impact on the world. So that's something, that's what comes to mind first when you ask that question, and that's something I'm really hoping to get involved with in the future. In the more general case, like right now, like I mentioned, I'm really appreciating the opportunity to be supportive in this massive upheaval. I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, it does. Please. Alexis?
Yeah, this is sort of a fun one. I think sort of the big takeaway of the last question actually is that some projects are really exciting and interesting and some aren't, right? You're gonna get on some projects that are a little tedious or very process heavy, which is my current one, and that's totally fine. I think what has been, I don't say helpful for me, but what makes it feel more meaningful is that I'm a very relationship-oriented person. And so thinking through the relationships with these clients, why does this work matter to them? How is it going to make their lives easier? What impact am I delivering for this company, this organization, et cetera, that's going to help them keep their engines running, which is then going to help support all their employees and staff across the board? That's the sort of thing that I keep in the back of my mind, that, yeah, right now making this particular PowerPoint deck is tedious. I'm not excited by it, but I'm delivering something really powerful and really useful to this organization. That's what keeps me going.
Fantastic. Thank you. Max?
Yeah, that's an interesting question. I think at the beginning of the client engagement, you know, you're working in a new industry that you've never really thought of before, on a project that you may never have thought of before. So at the beginning, you're sort of like, you know, you're like, okay, why am I interested? Why do I care about this? Why am I interested? And then you very quickly develop, these one firstly relationships with the client, which are sort of very powerful, and a lot of those client relationships are enduring, and you know, you have a lot of sort of skin in the game at wanting to see those clients be successful and you know, develop themselves as the case progresses. But you know, in the process of spending, you know, your entire day working on a problem, really, no matter how mundane the problem might sound from the outside, you become like wholly invested in solving it, and you feel very proud once you do crack it. You know, even if it's a, you know, I made a PowerPoint deck to communicate this complex idea in a simple way to a client group that doesn't like looking at graphs or doesn't, you know, has an aversion to the color blue. You know, it's a process, and at the end of the process, it's very satisfying to not only see that your work is valued and that you can drive pace and drive change within an organization, but also to see the clients that you work with succeed. You know, maybe you built something that the client ended up presenting, and then they got a shout out from someone higher up in the organization in a meeting, and now it's boosted their own career development, and that's a very satisfying feeling, I think.
I've really appreciated that people really care what you're doing, and that was by comparison to grad school, when sometimes it sort of felt like I was the only one who cared about what I was doing. It's really reassuring to have that feedback on a constant basis that what you're doing is being used and being read and being cared about.
Yeah, and I think if I synthesize a little bit of what all of you are saying, so one, mission is very personal, the type of mission and the type of impact you want to make. You have to think a little bit about that if you're considering this path. And then on the other side, you know, most consulting firms, especially the three firms that our panelists work for, I mean, they're working for boards of directors and senior management whose job is to drive shareholder value in the private sector. Now, there are also many external impacts to the work. You know, right now, organizations with our current public health crisis are struggling to survive and to try to keep people employed. So the better those organizations can perform and the more they can manage the crisis situation, then the more people stay employed. And that has a very big impact on our society. So you somewhat have to think about this macro view of mission and how you define that individually, because each of our panelists has sort of said, yeah, there's a bunch of mundane things that it's hard at times to see that. But I think that's a very important question if you're going down this path, because it fits for some and it doesn't always fit for others. And the final thing I think I might say is, you know, a couple of years into your career, you have a little bit more leverage to define the projects you might be doing. And therefore, you can navigate to some of those studies and efforts and cases that will give you maybe a little bit more connection to the things that matter to you individually. So we've spent a little bit of time kind of laying out what is this career path, what is the work that everybody's doing. Now I want to talk a little bit about the process to get this job. And I think what I'd love to have our panelists do collectively, and we'll sort of piece this process together, is how it works for graduate students. And so, you know, maybe Alexis, if I could start with you, what is the recruiting process? How are the consulting firms going about hiring graduate students? And then after we have a little bit of this foundation, then we'll talk a little bit about how each of you prepared for that interview process. So Alexis, would you maybe give us a few pieces of the recruiting process from your experience?
So I don't know that I had the most traditional path in, just because I did not actually have any contact with recruiting until after I was, you know, after I was offered a first round interview. So I was sort of doing my own work or thinking in the background, and then submitted my cover letter resume for the application. And then once I was offered a first round interview, then I started to have a lot of really heavy interaction with recruiting. And what was really interesting to me was that I think there's this sort of outside perspective that I at least had at the time, which is that consulting, and maybe particularly so McKinsey, is a really competitive or cutthroat or type A world. And that was just not my experience. I had people from all over the place at the firm business analysts, recruiters, managers, other associates, everyone reaching out to offer encouragement or case coaching or, you know, a coffee chat. There's a particular like subset of recruiting at McKinsey that just does what we call APBs, alternative professional degrees. Those are some master's students, all PhDs, et cetera. So those folks would reach out, and we had our own interview day. We had recruiting events for ourselves. I had a really, really wonderful experience with that, but I didn't have contact with recruiting ahead of the application process.
And Hillary?
So I think my contact started with, I actually was trying to think through this and couldn't remember how I got on some email list that started talking about info sessions in, I think, March or April of 2018. 2017, I lose track of years. So my first real engagement with people at BCG was applying for the summer programs, and that then got me into the pipeline. So I think I was applying for the summer programs in, I should really think through what year this would have been. It's now 2020, I graduated 2019. It would have been summer of 2018 when I was doing the summer programs. So I think I started getting, like Alexis was mentioning, people reaching out to talk as that process proceeded. But I really didn't have much contact with anybody before starting to go to those info sessions and then applying for the summer programs.
Fantastic. And Max?
I think the first point, I guess, to answer your original question, just at a more sort of macro level, you know, I guess all of these firms are growing at the moment at an unprecedented pace. And there's only so many people in the pool of MBAs that they have to draw from. So all firms are now increasingly hiring more and more advanced degree talent from beyond the MBA pool in order to sort of fill that demand. And in terms of my journey, so I went to this panel in 2018, and following that, as Hillary sort of alluded to, I ended up on some email distribution list, and I think it was through Mike Tessel that alerted me to the fact that all of these firms had some kind of event that was geared at advanced degrees and helping them to understand what a consulting career might look like and what that pathway was. And, you know, in my case, I went to Curious About Consulting, which was Bain's equivalent of one of these events, which was fascinating. I was very excited about the potential of a different career and something I'd never really, consulting was not on my radar at that point in time. I really had no idea what it was. So Curious About Consulting was an aptly named program because I was curious and I didn't know what I was, what I was looking at. And I guess through that process, I realized that I loved the kind of people, like as Alexis was saying, you know, you have this idea in your head that it's a whole lot of type A personalities, very competitive, maybe not the kind of environment that I would have necessarily liked. But when you actually meet people in person at these networking events, They're like super interesting from a very diverse array of backgrounds. You know, I remember on my first event, I met someone who'd come from like silicon chip manufacturing. There was an ex-jazz musician, someone who used to work in the, you know, renewable energy sector. Oh, this is cool. You know, these people are real people. They're super interesting. And, you know, the kind of people that I'd love to work with. And, you know, from that point, you sort of fall down that funnel of going to more and more events, learning more about, you know, what the career would look like as an advanced degree. And then, of course, getting into the whole interview process, which I imagine we'll touch on momentarily.
Yeah. And I think as I look at the timing for this year, so most of the large firms have a summer program. I think those application dates just completed. But for anyone in the future, I mean, generally on the firm's websites for advanced degree candidates, they have their summer programs that everyone's speaking about. And those applications this year, I think, were due kind of the third and fourth week of March. So for those of you in the future, keep that in mind. And then the full-time process tends to occur late summer. So applications are due kind of July-ish, if I remember. So there is a structured recruiting process for advanced degree candidates, but then many of the firms are also, and Max kind of hit on this, they're looking for people as they're growing. We'll talk about the current environment impacts maybe at the end of our call. But you do want to be aware of those timelines. So that's something for our audience. And UChicago Grad and also the Gargoyle Consulting Club both tend to share a lot of that information. So keep that in mind. So as Max alluded to, we're going to talk a little bit about the preparation. So I would like to have each of the panelists describe one major activity that you focused on to help with your interview preparation. And we'll then kind of lay out the full scope of what it takes to get a consulting job offer. And Alexis, maybe you could begin. That kind of gives you the choice off of the menu of which of those things you want to talk about first.
Preparing for the interview itself. So there were three sort of big things that I was thinking about in getting ready for the interview. One is the case interview, two is the personal experience portion of the interview, and then three, which I think people don't think about enough, is what I've heard jokingly referred to as the airport test before, which is, would you want to be stranded in an airport for 6 hours with this person? So just making sure that you're bringing your best self and sort of showing what a good colleague or, you know, fun person you'd be to hang around with, or at least, you know, comfortable in your own skin. So I think where I can maybe start is thinking about that interview or the case interview portion. I think that was the portion that up front seemed like it'd be the most intimidating perhaps for me personally. So I spent a good deal of time, you know, I purchased some case prep books. I roped in my poor unsuspecting life partner over here to help me, who had no idea what I was talking about or doing, but he did his best to help me do some case prep. I know there's the Gargoyle Consulting Club on campus is probably a more effective way to go about doing this than what I did. But regardless, I spent a good deal of time just practicing what the case interview might look like. And the more you do it, the more comfortable you get with it. But you definitely want to spend some time thinking through that, just that when you go into your interview, even if you're thrown a true curveball, which absolutely happened to me, you're at least able to sort of maybe laugh your way through it and still sort of find a path through that curveball question that you weren't expecting.
Were there any particular resources or activities that you did, Alexis, as part of your preparation for the case interview?
I definitely bought a couple of, there's some really good books online on Amazon, even just case prep books that have like, you know, 100 sample case interviews in them and sample answers, right? Those were super helpful. I think the most important thing I did though was practicing out loud, because it's one thing to sit and like do the math problem in your head. I did not realize I was going to struggle as much as I did doing it out loud, because when you're in your case interview, you'll need to walk your interviewer through your logic. You'll need to walk them through how and why you're thinking the way you are. And doing that with someone staring at me was very different from just doing it in my head at a table by myself. So absolutely, if you're not attending, I mean, I would recommend and encourage you to try attending the consulting club or find some other friends that are going through the process. But at the very least, find someone who can sit there and listen to you while you talk through your thoughts out loud, because that's going to be a really critical part of the interview.
Great. Thank you. Hillary, how about you?
Am I talking about cases or am I doing something new now?
If you want to add on to the case conversation, please do. You can also talk about something new or both.
Okay. I will do both. I will
Perfect.
Start with cases, but it applies to the fit as well. I think I did not do any case practice just on my own. Everything I did was with other people for exactly the reasons that Alexis said. So I was using case books from all the different business schools that put them out. I think I got them through the consulting club. And I probably spent the most time on practicing case interviews with mostly people that I'd met through the events that the firms put on and consulting club, just other people who were very dedicated to the process. And we'd get a lot of practice in together. And that was extremely valuable, especially to see how different people might approach the problem, because you don't know who your interviewer is going to be and they might think about it in a very different way from you. And so the more exposure you've had to different people's ways of thinking, the better. On the same tactic, practicing for the fit interview with other people was also really useful to me. I had one friend who we sat down, we just blocked a morning to sit down and go through a huge list of possible fit interview questions and just how would we answer this, which was a useful way to start thinking about what sorts of stories do I want to pull in. On the stories point, I think that was a big mindset shift for me in preparing for the fit interview. Was I went to a few you should come with grad events where they were talking about you need to have these stories. And it finally started to make sense to me that you can answer any question if you have the right set of stories. And so I think putting in that time with another person to start to develop what are the things I might be able to say in answer to any question was much more helpful than if I sit on my own and think, oh, this is an easy question, I can answer that, I can come up with something. But you can't if someone is staring at you, or at least I can't. So I think the takeaway from both of those is just the more practice with other people, the better, at least in my experience. And one other plug was I did some mock fit interviews that were also very helpful.
Excellent. And Max?
I have a few thoughts, I think, across the whole interview process. The first sort of addition to what Alexis and Hillary have already said, I suppose, is knowing what a good case interview looks like is very important, because you can practice a case interview with anyone and feel good about it. But knowing, I mean, you need some sort of benchmark with which to be able to compare yourself. And I think that's one of the things that I struggled with initially. So certainly looking to find at least one case practice partner who has either been through the process before or has been in, say, the Gargo Consulting Club for some time and has experience on what good looks like. I think that's really, really important. And there are some resources you can find on YouTube, you know, online of mock case interviews showing for each individual firm, you know, what an example of a good case interview would be. So I think that is sort of one important aspect. To Hillary's point about it, and Alex's point as well, about having to practice with other people, that's certainly true, but there were a lot of times where I didn't have a practice partner where, I mean, practicing by yourself is not lost time, because you can sort of read through a case description and then you don't have that component of being able to explain it when someone else is watching you, but you can at least say, okay, I've read the case description, I'm going to write down my initial thoughts, like on a piece of paper. You can practice the calculations on a piece of paper without the pressure again of someone else watching you, but at least become comfortable with the type of calculations that you might have to do in a case interview. And then on the topic of the actual interview itself, I think recognizing early on that it's not just a matter of someone asking you a question and then you talking to them about what is going through your head. Like, it's meant to be a conversation, and you can expect that there will be like some back and forth between you and the interviewer. You know, they're not going to stare at you blankly while you parrot off your thoughts and solve the case without any sort of interaction. So I think going into it expecting that, oh, I'm going to have an interesting conversation with this person about some, you know, little business problem, and that's a fun activity, really takes the edge off a little bit and can help relax you. And then on the side of the fit interview, well, not just the fit interview, I think, no, the fit interview, I guess, like, thinking of the fit interview as not only them evaluating you for fit, but you should be evaluating the firm for fit. I mean, if you go into it thinking, you know, I'm making a major career change here. Is this the place that I want to be? Do I like the people? You know, do I have a good set of questions that I can ask my interviewer that really try to get at what I would like to know? You know, things like, I mean, you can ask pointed questions like, what do you enjoy most about the job? You know, and I think interviewers probably appreciate that, right? It might feel like a tougher question to ask, or maybe not that one, but asking them a question like, what don't you like about your job? You know, those sort of things. They seem like tough questions to ask sometimes, but I think people appreciate that you're taking the whole exercise seriously and you have, you know, you're evaluating them to see if this is a place that you would want to work. And then I think more generally, something that was a factor for me was being more comfortable with nebulous type calculations in general. Mm-hmm. I mean, coming from a very analytical background, you're used to working out a number to the nth decimal place. And, you know, when you're looking at a cost bar and, you know, you might genuinely say, oh, look, it looks like you can save 10, you know, you have a $10 million cost bar. You can save $1 million by, you know, by my back of the envelope analysis by renegotiating a contract with a vendor. You know, just being able to say 10% rather than calculating a number exactly is probably enough in a lot of cases. It's not like in, you know, physics, for example, if you're 1% off on acceleration due to gravity, you know, that's a 5% difference in how close we orbit the sun and cataclysmic, catastrophic climate change. You know, it's a completely different sort of bar for how hand wavy you can be on some calculations, I suppose. So knowing where you should be exact and where you should be like, this is, you know, just being ballpark is going to drive the conversation forward.
You're muted, Pam.
Thank you. thank you. A question from our audience that I think is worth interjecting at this point. Is it helpful, do you think, to have kind of a consulting-like experience prior to the interview process? So some of the activities that are on campus, whether it's a case competition or some of the programs through My Choice or Polsky or the Tech Transfer and others, do you guys think that that's helpful, critical? Where does it maybe sit on the spectrum? Alexis, any reaction from you?
You know, I don't think that that's critical. It's not going to be part of your interview process. I think if it's going to help you prepare for the interview and help you feel more comfortable going into it, then it's useful for you to do and you should do it. But the interviewers themselves are not going to be using that as any sort of benchmark to evaluate you. All they care about is that interview experience you had with them in the room that day. So if it's going to help you do better and feel better, more confident going into it, then by all means pursue those activities. But I would not be super concerned about that in terms of the interview process itself.
Max or Hillary, any other thoughts from you?
I could offer one thought there, I suppose. Yeah, I mean, as Alexa said, I don't think it necessarily helps with the interview. But I mean, one thing it might do, though, is it does highlight perhaps in a little more detail what the job is actually like and the way that you might think about solving a problem. So it might be useful as a tool to decide whether or not, hey, I enjoy the exercise of solving, you know, a fluffy nebulous problem, you know, with a small team of people, rather than being a tool to help you pass the interview phase of the recruiting process.
Yeah, and one comment I wanted to make, because our audience is fairly diverse, you know, you have to know your base skill set getting in, and most of you are going to take your resume or your CV and tailor it to the consulting role, which you Chicago grad can very much help you with, as well as the other students. And then you somewhat have to know what your baseline is. So if you're a humanities person, possibly more of your research work and analytics could be qualitative. And then some of those quantitative things that Max is actually describing can come into play. But everyone has a fantastic set of stories. So it doesn't matter what your academic background is to really help with the stories. But from the case perspective, kind of knowing where your skill set is strong and maybe where some of the differences are in your academic background is going to help you think particularly about some of the quantitative and the analytic aspects of the case prep. And I think the same goes for some of your business acumen, but I've seen some, and I'm sure all of you have colleagues that come from different academic backgrounds that are wonderful consultants. It's just sort of knowing yourself and your skill sets that help you succeed in the interview process and where some of those gaps would be. Would that relate to some of the perspective that you guys have? I see Alexis nodding the head.
Yeah, for sure. I think I saw there was a question about humanities and social sciences people coming in. You know, the way that we are treated is no different from a natural sciences person or an MBA person. We're all sort of treated the same in the process. So if you've been in the humanities world for a while and haven't revisited your GRE math, that might be a good opportunity now to do that. And to just sort of, none of the math you'll have to do in a case interview is like calculus, right? But just sort of thinking through that analytical, more quantitative stuff is going to be useful to practice. So there are some skill sets that go into a good case interview that might be useful to revisit. And that's true for anyone regardless of their background. So
great. So we have about 8-9 minutes left. I'm going to ask the panel each one more question, and then I'm going to look through the final questions in the Q&A. And so if anyone out in our audience wants to upvote some of those questions, please do so. So now, as you all have been in this role, and not that any of you might be leaving anytime soon, but when you think about your career opportunities going forward that are interesting you or potentially you're thinking about, what are maybe one or two options for a path post-consulting? And if you're not maybe thinking about something externally, you know, what then does the future look like for you? Hillary, might I have you address that first?
I am very much in the early mode, still somewhat learning the job, still starting to learn what the options are moving forward. Some of the things that I've thought about, I mentioned the social impact interest. I could be interested in going in that sort of direction. In the nearer term, there are some things I'm very interested in, like there are opportunities to do a secondment where you'll work with another organization for up to a year or work in a different office in a different country for up to a year. So those are more near-term things that I'm very interested in expanding my options there. Longer term, I know that people go in a lot of different directions. There are people who stay on a consulting track for a long time. There are people who will stay with their firm but move away from the consulting track and maybe be more of an expert or work in more of an administrative role. There are people who go into corporate, work with clients. I think I heard somebody started a wine company or something. Like, people do many different things. And I'm like, at the beginning of grad school, when I was just starting to gather all of the options, I'm still in that stage right now.
Thanks. Max.
I think it's sort of very similar to Hillary. I mean, one of the great things about the job and the great array of different client situations and industries and capabilities that you get exposed to is you have this great skill set that really can take you anywhere, you know, post-job. And you've also built a lot of, you know, great relationships with clients that might end up turning into something else down the road if you ever thought about, you know, about moving into something else. But I think it's exciting, the exposure you get to different industries, and it really, you know, to Hillary's point, helps you curate that list of this is what I want to do in the future and this is what I don't want to do in the future. But, you know, short term, there are, again, similar to Hillary, a lot of things on my radar, like international transfers. You can do short internal sort of role transfers as well at Bain. So you might, like I might decide that I want to try working for a year in the advanced analytics group, which is sort of the data science branch of Bain, you know, to see what that's like, because that's something that you can, you know, if you think that you want to do more of the heavily analytical work, you can you can move your skill set over there. But I think for me at the moment, long term, it's just progressing through the different stages of the sort of, you know, consulting track position, you know, from a developing consultant to a more experienced consultant, and then sort of see as I have more and more of these case experiences, you know, it'll expand my horizons and help me decide what it is that I want to do next. But still very much early stages for me. But it's exciting to see what some of the other people from, you know, within the firm have gone off and done, you know, across a wide variety of industries, from startups to very, you know, large roofing companies and whatnot.
All right. I'm going to pose a few rapid fire questions. I'm probably only going to have one panelist answer these. So first question, can you talk about travel, a little bit of the intensity of the work-life balance? Alexis, could I maybe have you just tackle that very briefly?
Yep, this is great. This varies a ton. I think the very classic model is you fly out Monday morning, you fly back Thursday evening. Your work hours can be a little intense Monday through Thursday. Friday is usually a little bit calmer. You might go into your home office. That's a very classic view. This varies a lot by engagement and engagement type. Some of your studies are really intense and you'll put in a lot of hours, and some are much more relaxed and you'll feel a lot more normal. At McKinsey, there's a big push to think about alternative travel. So right now, actually, if we were traveling and not all sheltering in place, my team only travels Tuesday through Thursday. So there's a lot of different models of this. And I think, at least at McKinsey, if there's a lot of shift happening, I wouldn't be surprised if the industry at large is also shifting a little bit.
Great, thank you. Max, question for you. If someone thought later about consulting and kind of their graduate career, would you recommend the postdoc process to help, or that opportunity to kind of help prepare, take a little bit of time? Do you think that that's a worthwhile endeavor for someone who, you know, maybe is in their final year of grad school?
I think certainly, like, if you're really sitting on the fence about what it is that you want to do next in your career, a postdoc is sort of a great way of delaying that decision, because it doesn't put you back at all in terms of the recruiting process for a lot of these firms. And it can sort of, I guess, supply an extra level of comfort that when you do leave, you're making the right decision. I mean, for me, that was sort of the pivotal moment where I was like, okay, I've taken my academic career to its logical conclusion now, and I can see, you know, I can see what's happening on the other side of the river, and that's not what I want to do in the future. So having now left academia, I can look back and go, okay, I made the right decision. So if, for a level of comfort like that, it can be quite beneficial. But also if you're still not exactly sure what you want to do and you want a little bit more time, it's certainly not going to be detrimental.
Great. And last question for Hillary. For you, what was the most challenging part of the interview process?
Most challenging part of the interview? That's a good question. I'm trying to think. So what I'm trying to think of is, what were the times in an interview where I just thought, okay, that's it. I totally messed this up. Nothing is happening after this. I might as well just leave. So I think what was hard for me in the interviews was the quick adjustments, like having made a mistake, recovering from that. And I think that's a hugely important thing to be able to do, but it's also really hard. And I think other people have touched on this through the panel, but coming in with confidence is sort of the word, relaxed is sort of the word, but having an attitude that it's going to be okay. you'll do well. If you don't, that's fine. I think coming in without putting too much weight on the interview, that's a lot easier to say than to do. But I think that really helps with being able to recover when something does go imperfectly in the interview, because it will. I think everyone who has this job screwed something up in the interview. You'll make it through.
Yeah, fantastic. So we are wrapping up. I want to thank all of our panelists for their great input. I believe the session's been recorded. And also thanks to UChicago Grad for all the work they did. Reminder, UChicago Grad plus the Gargoyle Consulting Club have great tools and resources for prep. I actually do some workshops with the Gargoyle Consulting Club. Mm-hmm. Please join us. And thanks to everyone who participated. I hope you guys found this valuable. Good day, everyone.
All right. Thank you all so very much. Have a great rest of your Friday.
Thank you, everyone.
All right. Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye.